Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's voices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX, made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. What does it mean to be in a polyamorous relationship? Well, Merriam-Webster defines it as involving, having, or characterized by more than one open romantic relationship at a time. Today, it's just one of many new relationships that's gaining popularity. A 2016 study published in the Journal of Sex and Marital Therapy found that one in five people in the U.S. engage in some form of consensual, non-monogamy, or NCNM, at some point in their lifetime. Are open relationships or non-monogamous relationships really that common? We're going to find out about that today. Are polyamorous relationships the new normal? We're going to talk about that too. My guests for today's show are Michelle Call, Executive Director of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of the Central Coast, otherwise called GALA, Alex, and say your last name again.
Malychev.
And Alex is here as a newbie.
Hello, I'm a noob.
A noob. Yep. And Dr. Sandy Peace, a clinical psychologist. And we're going to be talking about polyamory and why it's gaining popularity, how it's working, and how it's entering into a society and how it's working for people. Our show today is live, and you can join our discussion by bringing your comments and your questions, because I'm sure you're probably going to have a lot of those, too. You can call us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And Sandy, I'm going to start with you here. Since this really kind of has been something that you've been working on for a while, right?
Yes, it has.
Can you talk a little bit about your background and what got you in here?
Sure. Yeah. So I am a licensed clinical psychologist and I have a private practice in LA, but I worked at Cal Poly Counseling Center for a few years Cal Poly. But as a curious person, noticing that the divorce rate was 50%, I started asking myself very early, how come marriage isn't working for half the population? And I'm not someone who likes to just take, oh, well, because that's how we do things. That's not an answer I like. So I started asking the question, well, if it's not working for half the people, what other ways might work? So that's how I started looking into how do people do relationships and what might some alternatives be. So
polyamory came up on the radar for you.
Yeah, it did, partly because I also noticed a lot of people engage in infidelity.
Right.
And they step out of their monogamous relationship and are actually having multiple relationships just without the knowledge and consent of their partners. And so I'm like, what's going on here? What if that is actually the norm, and is there a way to do it more ethically?
And so you were seeing that maybe that stepping out was breaking up the relationship?
Well, it sometimes breaks it up.
Or if it was found out.
Sure, okay. If it was found out.
Gotcha.
But sometimes it creates a crisis in a relationship that just helps shake things up. You know, when I work with couples, that's often...
Right.
It's a big life changer.
Were you doing an actual survey or study?
Well,
or this was kind of...
This was just my observation of life.
Okay. All right.
But then when I got into my doctoral program and I had to do a dissertation, I'm like, you know, what's this polyamory thing? And how does someone become polyamorous? Like, I had no idea what that was, you know, and the term kind of emerged in 2016 as a, you know, new to the dictionaries. And 2006. And so I just started doing research. I went to groups, I read books. So I decided to do my dissertation research on polyamorous identity development. So how does someone go from, I don't even know what polyamory is, to I am polyamorous?
And so can you give me the summary of how that evolves?
Oh my.
Do you have Cliff Notes on this?
I have my Cliff Notes right here. Let me unlock my iPhone. So like many identities, whether it's racial identity, if you're an immigrant to a new country, we start with a dominant cultural perspective of the world. And we as a society just kind of buy into it. And when we start asking ourselves, well, who am I really? And what works for me really? Sometimes we come up with an answer that's a little different than what...
Different than
the dominant cultural
parent.
Like if you're gay or lesbian, for instance.
Correct.
You're like, well, I don't like people of the opposite gender, so what's my option? And very often, you know, as a psychologist, I see people coming in and going, oh, well, I must be the problem. I can't conform to the social norm, so I must be the problem. And I like to say, well, what if the social norm is the problem? So basically, here's the steps, and we can talk more about them or not.
Yeah, we will.
But first, there's just being unaware of polyamory. We don't even know what it is. It's not even in our cultural consciousness. And I would say even within the multicultural discussions we have, we don't talk about relationship style. It's still just assumed that people will be married and monogamously partnered.
Right.
I mean, more and more people can be monogamously partnered without marriage, but married with kids.
And that's fairly recent too,
right,
in this society.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think we can talk about that more with the relationship escalator concept.
Right.
But then after being unaware, people attempt to conform. It's like, this is what everyone's doing, so I try. And then the third step is, I have failed. I have failed at monogamy.
Right, yeah.
And this could be, it just never felt right for me, or I was monogamous and I cheated and I felt really guilty, but and then there's this aha moment where people are introduced to polyamory as a concept. Like, oh my gosh, you can do that? What? And you can be honest about it? What, I don't have to cheat? No, I must be on a different planet. You know, one of the participants I talked to, he said, "You mean I'm polyamorous? I'm not crazy?" It was such an eye-opening moment.
Huh.
One of those, maybe the system is crazy, not me.
Yeah.
And then there's an acceptance of polyamory as a thing. So we continue to kind of cognitively and emotionally like adjust to this concept that maybe this fits for me. And then we might talk to the noob more about this. But engaging in polyamorous relationships.
Yeah.
Like once you say, okay, this is a thing, then you actually have to do it. And the participants I talked to, there is a very steep and a very continuous learning curve on how to do it because we have no blueprints. We all know how to do monogamy.
Right.
Every song, every movie, it tells us, right?
Yeah. This,
we don't know. So people are pioneers, they're figuring out, they're making mistakes. So I'm sure we'll talk more about that too. And then really participating in community, finding your people. This is true for so many marginalized groups,
right?
Whether it's, you know, there's a great book called Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria, or Why We Have Gay and Lesbian Centers. People need to find others like them where they can just be themselves and not have to censor and feel a part of,
right,
and
be
I'm
authentic.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Right. And then there's self-identifying as polyamorous, owning that identity. This is a crucial part of who I am.
And letting it fill, I would think then letting it fill in the spaces of who you are.
Yeah.
You know, kind of letting it flow into. And so how did you meet Michelle?
I don't know if you want to
Michelle,
talk about that.
How did Michelle? You guys meet?
So I actually met Sandy when she was doing her dissertation, and I was one of the subjects of her interview.
Oh, interesting.
And it was really great to be part of that because we weren't friends yet. We didn't really know each other. That she was very, very cool about. She didn't want to friend anybody that she'd met locally until after her studies were over. So we had to wait a while there. But it really was interesting in making me think about what my journey had been and where I was in those steps.
And so you came into it because you were living a polyamorous lifestyle.
Yes. Yeah.
And had been for a while.
Yes.
And did you know that's what it was?
That it was. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was involved in the local Central Coast polyamory group at that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had already named it and embraced it. And,
yeah.
And what can you talk a little bit about how that evolved for you?
Yes. So I, in my earlier life, I was definitely on the relationship escalator, as we call it. This is a term that talks about the social norm of how we form relationships. We start out with making contact with somebody, maybe having a few dates, flirting, that kind of thing. Then we go out, then we're supposed to get more serious, right? You have your first kiss, then maybe you get engaged, then you get married, then you have children, maybe you buy a house first, then you have children. And then you leave a legacy for the next generation. And this is just kind of the way that we expect things to go. And that was how the first half of my life went. I was in a miserable marriage. I didn't think there were any other options. I got out of that marriage and actually moved from England to San Luis Obispo. And when I moved here, I thought, this is my chance, you know, I will start my whole new life. And I had been researching about ethical non-monogamy type relationships. And so that's what I did when I moved here. And so I've been with my partner now, my husband, who I'm married to for 15 years. And both of us have had various other partners over that time period. Currently, I have a girlfriend as well as my husband. And I'm bisexual, so that really fits me well.
Yeah.
And a lot of bisexual people actually end up with the opposite sex partner, most do. I think part of that is because of monogamy. I wonder how many people, if they were given the choice to say, you could have a man and a woman, maybe that opens a whole new relationship choice.
Yeah. 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 That's really, really fascinating. And as a noob, so talk a little bit about how you were introduced to polyamory.
So about 7 years ago, I moved to California and I kind of landed in this burlesque dance community because I've always been a dancer and it was very like there's a lot of sexual freedom. It was a lot of the freedom that I wanted in my life. And I remember I was at a party and sitting next to someone who was a friend, and across from us was his girlfriend that he had been with for, I want to say, like 9 years. And she was making out with her other boyfriend. And that was just like mind blowing to me. It was so weird. I was like sitting next to him. I'm just like, aren't you jealous about the fact that your girlfriend is making out with another guy? And he just had this really like self-aware response and was just like, well, you know, sometimes I get jealous. And when I do, I look at my core needs and like what needs aren't being met. And we have conversations about it, but it's gotten easier over the years. And that was kind of my first like eye-opening experience. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, what? I can just have a conversation about my needs? Jealousy is an indicator of needs? That's interesting. So I just started meeting a bunch of people who were in these poly relationship styles. And again, seeing like families where they were married, had children, the children knew about the other partners. It was this community like, oh, aunt and uncle or whatever they wanted to call them. So interesting. And at the time I was married, so I started having conversations with my husband about our relationship and sort of, you know, maybe what unmet needs I had. And the boundaries started to like blur a little bit. The first thing I asked was like, is it okay if I flirt with other men? Like, that's something I really like to do. So we negotiated and talked a lot, and that became part of our agreement. And then it was like cuddling, and then it was kissing. And then when it came to opening up to another romantic relationship, that amongst many other reasons, we decided to part ways. And I think at that time, I really wanted to try poly because it's heartbreaking for me to have to let go of someone that I love mm-hmm. because I happen to fall in love with another person, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we read More Than Two, which is a book that we're probably going to talk about and is amazing. And I just started to pull apart all the like implicit agreements that I had with my husband, and instead of just picking one style of monogamy and assuming that all the agreements are the same, we just started talking about all the agreements. Like, what are the financial agreements? What are our time commitments to each other? What are the boundaries of our relationship? Do we have rules? How do we feel about rules? And that, I think that's when I met Michelle, because I was like, I'm so lost. I don't know what I'm doing. This is so hard. And I met with her to talk about something else, but we ended up talking about poly the whole time. And it's just been kind of a That's been my path since then, just a lot of learning and asking for help and support from my friends who have already been there.
It sounds like with polyamory or polyamorous relationships, because there isn't this designed construct that we just fall into as, you know, that's the way it is, there's the freedom, almost the expectation, to have to ask and strip it down to what is this and how does it work and what about?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think you'll find that polyamorous people discuss their relationships in much greater detail and negotiate many more aspects of them than monogamous people tend to do. But I do want to just add, I was thinking as Alex was talking, that polyamorous people have nothing against monogamous people. There is nothing wrong with monogamy. My grandparents were married
Thank
for 60
for
years,
that.
Never looked at another person. This is really about having a mindful relationship, choosing about what you want instead of just going with the default.
Yes. Thank you for saying that, because I think that this is not an either or is a good or a bad. It's about what's suited, and I think you've made that point fits for you.
Yeah, I think too, if we dig a little deeper into monogamy, people actually do it quite differently.
Yes.
Based on their needs. So when we dig down, people are
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, if we think about what are the hot topics in any relationship, sex, money, kids, lifestyle, time, how much time we spend together,
attention,
how much
attentiveness,
time we spend apart. You'll have some couples who are joined at the hip and they do everything together and that's how they like it. We have other couples who have very independent lives and who might see each other in the evenings.
Right.
You know, I often, when I'm working with couples, particularly who are feeling taken advantage of, I say, well, what if instead of just assuming you're going to spend the evening together, you actually plan to spend an evening together?
Wow, that's a concept.
Right.
Yeah.
I did want to jump back to your last question about, while polyamorous people, there's no roadmap. And indeed, every person who does polyamory does it a little differently and has a little different idea about what it means. And so you really have to have a conversation with other people. There's a great book called Opening Up that did a research study on the different ways people do polyamory. So one is solo polyamory. It's someone who decides to remain single and not have a primary partner. And they have many multiple partners. And maybe their primary partner is their career or themselves.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Some people are in what's called an erotic triad, where everyone is in relationship with one another. Or a triad where, I guess no people on the air can't see this, but there's a V where one person is the fulcrum and might be dating two different people, even though those other two people, the primary partner and the metamour, of the primary partner, for instance, aren't dating. So there's a lot of different ways to configure it. It just starts to look like the alphabet after a while. You've got N's and X's. And
you use that great term metamour. That's your partner's partner.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so people do that very differently in polyamory. Some people are best friends with their partner's partners. Some people really don't want anything to do with it. And that's a very individual choice, like Sandy was talking about. I personally have an agreement where if my partner's partner is not interested in a relationship with me, that's fine. But I want to meet them just one time so we all understand that we are polyamorous and there's no cheating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to get back to that in just a moment. And I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. My guests for today's show are here to talk about polyamory. And We're also here to answer any questions you may have about today's topic. You can call us by calling 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And you can also bring some of your life's experience onto the air if you want to share that. My guests are Michelle Call, Executive Director of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of the Central Coast, Alex
Milichev.
I'll get it sooner or later by the end of the show, hopefully. And Dr. Sandy Peace, a clinical psychologist. Michelle, for you, one question, you know, that I think comes up sometimes around this topic is there a difference between a polyamorous relationship and polygamy? You know, because I think in the past, a lot of people, and for you too, Sandy, people have heard of polygamy. Probably more people have heard of polygamy as a term than polyamorous at this point. What's the difference?
Right. So there is a big difference. And I think one of the biggest differences for me, and I know, Sandy, you might go into this a little bit more in depth, but for me, the difference is choice. So I think polyamorous relationships, both parties and more, are making those thoughtful choice relationships. And when we talk about polygamy, often we're hearing about a man who has multiple wives. Often that's a religious situation where maybe that's not the full relationship of everybody that it could be if they were actually consenting to it in a mm-hmm. in a full and informed way.
So it becomes more of a social norm that a female will belong to a multiple wife relationship, but not have a choice about or a say about happening.
Does she get to go out and find some other man to be in a relationship
right.
with?
No.
Yeah.
There are, interestingly, some cultures where polyandry mm-hmm. is the norm, where there's multiple husbands. This works particularly well in areas where there's not access to birth control and limited resources. So, for instance, a woman might marry brothers, and you keep the land in the family because you know all the kids are in the family. So it's just a matter of arranging the sleeping schedule to feel fair mm-hmm. and equal to everyone.
Huh. Does that also exist when there aren't as many males in the population?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll find out. You know, women have tipped over the edge of the world's population, have we?
We have. 52%.
Yeah, so we'll find out.
Also, Michelle, for... go ahead.
I remembered it. One of the things about polygamy, one man, multiple women, is we're talking about a power dynamic, a patriarchal societal power dynamic that happens where women are still viewed as the property of men. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just so amazing today. It's like there are four women around this table talking about polyamory. And that was, in a way, blowing my mind and in a way going, you know, this is women taking control of their sexual agency mm-hmm. and saying, hey, why don't we just be honest about who we are and what we want and be honest with one another in a really loving way and let us all explore our sexuality, explore our romantic attractions, really become full beings. We don't have to hide this from one another. It can enhance our relationship. It can enhance our lives as individuals and be a catalyst for personal growth and community bonding. And that's a very different flavor than sneaking around or treating someone like property.
Yeah.
So everyone's in charge of their own bodies, their own agency. We can say yes or no. You know, we have a say. We have a conversation.
Yeah. And you were mentioning, Michelle, that this really is, it's an open discussion and everybody's on board and has knowledge of what's going on and
right.
is in agreement.
That's the main difference between polyamory and cheating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess we didn't really say that explicitly in the definition,
right.
which is there are more than one relationship with the knowledge and consent of everyone involved.
Yeah.
So it's not just more than one romantic relationship. That's a lot of different things.
Is it implicit that each relationship or that the relationship be a sexual relationship?
I mean, absolutely not.
I think that's an important point too.
So I think a lot of people involved in polyamory are either asexual or demisexual.
Yeah. And talk about, okay, when you say asexual or demisexual, if somebody didn't understand that, what are you talking about?
So somebody who's asexual doesn't have any sexual desire, and somebody who's demisexual has sexual desire only under certain specific circumstances and not just generally for everyone they meet. I think that's one of the joys of polyamorous relationships, and it's even in a relationship where people have different sex drives, right? So maybe one partner has a lower sex drive and another partner has a higher sex drive. And so you go out to the movies and for a drive with one partner and you have a hot time in bed with the other partner, mm-hmm. and everybody's happy and everybody's getting their needs met.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to go back to you, Alex.
Yeah.
What you were in a relationship with your husband that I'm assuming mm-hmm. was a good relationship.
It was a wonderful relationship.
You're still there.
We're getting divorced.
Oh.
And it's one of those situations. I notice that people think that if you're splitting, it means like something didn't work.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Okay. Or like maybe it failed, but it was a very successful relationship and we both grew a ton. And kind of like what Michelle was talking about, we just happened to have a lot of honesty with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that honesty eventually led to the realization that we wanted different sorts of relationships. So I think everything we've been talking about is, I remember when I read the book More Than Two, it sounded so ideal. I was like, yeah, this makes so much sense, right? Like we have different needs. Why not have like more people meeting all my needs? And polyamory is really just many loves, right? And love can look so many different ways. And I want to be free to love. So it sounded so ideal. And then when I started doing it, it was really, really hard. Like really hard. Really, really hard. I can't even stress.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the areas that were really, really hard?
Yes. When your partner starts seeing someone else, that is really, really hard. And, you know, I'm just going to be honest. A lot of times when you think about polyamory, you think about it for yourself. And you're like, yeah, I'll have all these boyfriends. It's going to be great. but I actually just have one boyfriend because, as it turns out, I really like to just have one really strong relationship. But I really needed it to be clear that, like, it's okay to want other people. And we're going to talk about it when that happens. Like, that's the kind of honesty and freedom that I want. So then he started seeing someone else. And I was like, but she's so pretty, you know? And so, okay. So the first thing that comes up is jealousy. So I started looking at unmet needs, and then there's the comparison that happens, which is a whole slew of, I'm not good enough.
Sure.
In so many different ways that a lot of times in monogamy, you don't actually have to look at because your I'm not good enough gets met by this other person. You know, we have these agreements where they don't see other people
right.
and make me feel good enough because they chose me. Well, now my partner can choose me or someone else. And now that feeling has to come from a different place.
Right.
So now I have to look at of my not good enoughness.
That safety net is gone.
Yes, yeah. The safety net. Mm-hmm. And then there's, gosh, what else comes up? Safety is a good one. Abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
Having to deal with loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
Because some nights your partner's going to be out with their other partner.
Right.
And you know, you don't want to necessarily manipulate them into feeling bad about the fact that they're leaving you alone, right? Like that wouldn't
feel
very healthy.
Is it that you don't want to manipulate them or you know it's not right?
Well, you know, I just want to be clear. I have done my fair share of emotional manipulation and probably also sexual manipulation, and so has everyone. Mm-hmm. And what I love about the relationship that I have now is that we just talk about it, you know? Like he might be going out with his other girlfriend and maybe I'll get pouty and he'll be like, okay, well, you're doing that thing where you're making me feel bad for a decision that you already consented to. And I'm like, you're right, I am. And it's because I'm having loneliness and I'm having not good enoughness and it's not your responsibility. But I can also ask you to support me in my growth and have certain like boundaries as we grow into this relationship so that we're all kind of honest and supported.
It sounds like this is really about finding out more about you, about
what?
You discovering more about you.
What?
So it could could it be that at some point someone drifts into a singular relationship with someone because that's more about them and their needs at that time, or they drift in and out of a polyamorous relationship and finding someone for a period of time, that the safety of just a monogamous relationship works? I mean,
yes,
definitely.
Yeah, it's not an either or, right?
It's a both and.
It's a both and. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there have been times in my life where I felt more in my later life where I felt more monogamous and haven't been looking for another relationship. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when there's, you know, sometimes when I have. I noticed, Alex, that you were talking about that whole thing that can happen when your partner's going out with another partner. And I had that situation happen in my life where my partner, he had somebody else who was living with him that was more primary than me at that time. And she would get upset when he went out with me. She didn't like it. She felt abandoned. So we had an agreement. So when he was going to go out with me, he would spend an hour with her first, cuddling and making her feel secure, and then he would leave. And that was, we all had that agreement. So, because I wanted her needs to be met too.
Okay.
And so there are ways to deal with some of these feelings that are positive.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I wanted to say too that being in a polyamorous relationship is like being in 24/7 group therapy.
Yes.
So you got to really like processing, yeah, and talking about your feelings. Sometimes when I work with people, I'm like, okay, you guys need to just go out and have fun. No processing. That is your homework assignment this week. No talking. Have fun. Because it really can be a thing where we're so self-reflective of ourselves and what we're doing and all the emotions and all the self-discovery that we forget, oh, let's just have a relationship.
Yeah, you can just have an right, enjoyable relationship,
right,
and not work so
right,
much.
But yeah. I guess I want to also say that when we talk about shifting from a either or to a both and paradigm, really, this is, to me, the core of polyamory, is we're shifting worldviews to, I don't have to love this or that person. I can love this and that person. And to me, this is a radical concept that can change the world, not polyamory per se, but the shifting of, I can love you and you and you. I don't have to create a war. It doesn't have to be, if you love them, then you can't love me.
Then you can't love other people.
Right.
You mean like when people have more than one child and are suddenly able to love more than one child at once?
Yes. And love them differently, but
yeah,
equally.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio, from Salinas to Ventura, and streaming around the world on the web at kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. The voices you hear with me today are Michelle Call, Executive Director for GALA, Alex Milichev. Wow. And Dr. Sandy Pierce, a clinical psychologist. We're talking about polyamory. And this show is live, and we do invite you to actively join our discussion with your comments and questions. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. You know, we've mentioned at the beginning of the show that in monogamous relationships, there's always that risk of that affairs, cheating, and does that really come out of the fact that people are seeking some kind of polyamory needs, and then just not the ability or understanding that there could be the ability to be open about that?
So,
or are they different?
So I know that Sandy's going to probably tackle this a little bit, but one of the things I think that's important to remember is that humanity has not always been monogamous. I think really with the onset of agriculture and people needing to own property and figure out who owns things, monogamy became much more of a big deal. But in nature, there's really not a lot of monogamy. Some species are and some species mm-hmm. aren't. So I think it's actually been around as long as we've been around. It's just society's mores that have, you know, been higher and lower over time.
Yeah, there's a lovely little book called Sex at Dawn that talks about what was the phrase he used? The Flintstonianization of science, where the scientists looked at the animal kingdom through human moral and religious and cultural views and said, those animals are monogamous and mated for life. But when we look a little deeper, even in, you know, apes, where there's a big alpha who beats his chest and all the betas have to run, there is that situation where all the females are like paying the alpha attention and the other ones are off having sex with the betas because we need genetic diversity. Mm-hmm. but infidelity in a monogamous relationship is a very complex issue. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people think, oh, there must be something wrong with the relationship, and that's why people are stepping outside.
Right.
But that's not usually or often the case. I mean, I don't know what to qualify it with, but sometimes it is just curiosity, variety. You want to step outside of who you are and who you've been for a while and be a different person. Mm-hmm. You know, and envision a different life for yourself. And there's a way that an affair can do that in a very exciting and titillating way. And honestly, the taboo of it probably creates more desire for it than if we just said, sure, go ahead. Go ahead and sleep with whoever you want. It takes some of the naughtiness away from it.
Mm-hmm. Although there is still cheating in polyamory.
Oh, yes.
Like, don't, you know, polyamorous people also end up cheating.
Right.
So not, you know,
because they're not honest.
Because they don't want to be honest about the person they want to see with their partner or whatever. So it does occur.
They break the rules. They break the agreements that were made. And so when you break down cheating, what are we cheating? We're cheating the system of monogamy. But really, monogamy and infidelity are two sides of the same coin. They've gone together always.
There's been changes that have been happening in our society in terms of how people are relating to relationships. And I know there's a shift in the number of people that are wanting to get married. Can you talk a little bit more about what you see happening and why perhaps you see that happening?
Well, if I'm going to pull some statistics from my brain, I don't know if you want to get on Google and verify them, but the last census was in 2010. About 51% of the adult population was married. Another good portion were divorced or widowed. But a full third of the U.S. adult population was single, never been married. And when we think about, like, if we go back to the kind of the old school concept of marriage as being like, and now you get to have sex because you Right. are married. If a full third of U.S. adults are never going to marry, mm-hmm. does that mean they just can't have a sex life? So I think
likely not.
Right.
Yeah.
And so definitely those social mores have loosened up over the years, as is the need to even get married if you want to live with a partner, as is the need to get married to someone if you want to have children, as is even needing to get married. That's still people who choose to be single. There's still a lot of cultural bias against people who are single. Again, great little book called Singled Out. I think a professor up at Santa Barbara wrote that. Just looking at the ways that society, like, inadvertently leaves single people out. Like, they pay more in taxes. They can't take advantage of 2-for-1 deals at restaurants and cruise ships. You know, silly little things. But when you start to add them up, you're like, So to me, again, back to my premise that people need to figure out the way to do relationships that works for them.
Right.
I'm really an advocate of a society where we have the freedom to ask ourselves, what is going to work for me? I live in Los Angeles. It's a town, it's of creative people. You know, they're there to make movies and be models and become famous. And a lot of people are hustling. Their main focus is their career. Mm-hmm. So people aren't even dating seriously, sometimes until their early 30s, you know, aren't even thinking about children until early 40s, you know. So it's a very different culture,
right?
Like in a big city where creating not in the biological sense, but in the, you know, computer sense or the industry sense is more of a focus than creating a partnership or a family.
We've also made it so that, you know, in you mentioned the number of divorces that happen. Divorces can be very expensive at all kinds of different levels, you know, both emotionally, financially. And I wonder if some people are just not wanting to get involved for those reasons as well.
Well, and I think a lot of people are figuring out how to divorce more consciously and lovingly and co-parent. And so here's one of the other concepts I use a lot with people I work with is relationships are actually comprised of, if you think of a Venn diagram with four circles, there's love and emotional intimacy, there's sex, there is romance, the companionship piece, and then there's commitment over time. And I think a lot of people conflate these things and think, oh, well, if I love someone, that means we have to be together forever. Or if I want to go on dates and kiss, that means we have to have sex. I would say maybe not. You know, maybe people can get their needs met in different ways. And I think Michelle was talking about this a bit earlier, too. But yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. It looked like you had something you wanted to jump in with.
No, I was just listening to you.
Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned children, and I think that's something I want to talk about, too. How do children figure into this, too? Because we're talking about conversations and, you know, deep discussions, but these are really adult kind of dialogues, you know, evolving and really talking about needs. And where do children fit into this?
Well, I'm not sure I feel like it really is an adult topic because it's not about the sex. It's about relationships and how families, how families form in relationships.
So are children included in those discussions?
Children are most definitely included. And in fact, we have the Central Coast Polyamory has a monthly get together in the park that's for families so that the children can play together. But we definitely find that the being polyamorous and raising children has all kinds of advantages. So you have extra parents around. We had that when our child was 6 months old. We ended up in a relationship, my husband and I, with a lady named Jennifer. And that's actually how I came to Gala because she was a lesbian. She introduced us to Gala. I'd not heard of it before. Uh-huh. That was 15 years ago. And so we were together. We were a triad. We were all in relationships with each other. And so any two of us could go out for a date while the third person was home babysitting. When the child was colicky in the middle of the night, there was an extra person to get up.
Yeah.
And in fact, Jennifer worked in the house instead of going out, so she could be the night person, and then Lewis and I could still get up for work in the morning. There were just so many ways, and then having another person or people's perspective, like, There are just so many advantages to having that as a parent that I think it's a very positive thing.
Is that common? Is it common? I mean, you're very evolved in this.
Yeah, I am pretty involved.
And evolved.
Yes, she's the wise woman I always refer to. Woman friend.
That's the truth. I mean, you can speak to this, and this is something that you've evolved into. Do you think that it's common for individuals to involve their children in discussions like you do?
So I think it is if they get into it when the children are younger.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, if people come to polyamory and their kids are teenagers, they may want to wait to discuss that with them, especially as they're just getting into it. I find that more. But a lot of the people that are already around in our group, and there's also, I mean, not all the polyamorous people in town are in our group. In fact, most are not. And whenever we get together with people are raising children, they are definitely talking, and it's a community of people.
Yeah, and your encouragement to the parents then, if there are parents that are listening that are not involved in your group, is really to include children in discussion.
Absolutely. And actually, it has been difficult. There was a time when my child was in third grade when they were invited to a friend's house and made to pray over dinner. And then once they had told that there was a third parent in the house, we were told, please don't ever send your child to my house again.
Aww.
And yet at the Montessori preschool, they all understood that the child had a mom and a dad and a J. And they were completely fine with it. And they addressed everything to all three of us all the time. But I just really think that what you're showing your children, if you're having these discussions with them, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous, you're having these discussions about relationships so that when they are old enough to have relationships, they're thinking about them. They're not automatically doing the default. What do I want in a relationship? Like, what do I bring to the table, mm-hmm. and what do I want? And how many, you know, so it's not just the default relationship escalator. It's mindful relationship building.
I guess if I can jump in for a
second. Please.
I think a lot, like in the queer community, the concept of chosen family.
Right.
You know, sometimes we're rejected by our families of origin because of an identity that we hold that is not the same as theirs, which is, you know, your sexuality. And so in a way, picking your family, mm-hmm. and being bound by other things aside from blood is a very powerful bond. And
you also sometimes get to select better people.
Sure. Yes. But also the idea of including friends in our life as a way to introduce our children to different perspectives and different ideas, different people. I personally am a fan of let's let kids be introduced to a lot of different perspectives. Mm-hmm. To me, it just creates a more open mind, some flexibility. You know, interestingly, I'm thinking, oh yeah, nuclear family, mom, dad, da da. When I think back to my own life, my whole family raised me. I was raised by a single working mom, so I had aunts and grandmas and great grandmas and different aunts and these cousins, and it was a very rich experience. Mm-hmm. I got to have different food and different rules, and
exactly,
I became very adaptable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. We're going to take a call here. Artemisia, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Aloha.
Did you have a question or comment?
I kind of wanted to respond to a couple of things you said, or the group said.
Okay.
Absolutely. Wonderful. I will apologize. I was having some issues with my phone, so I missed the very beginning. So I hope I'm not doubling down on something that was already mentioned. But I wanted to respond to a couple of things I heard. One of them was the comment that polyamory is really about you. And I wanted to push back on that a little bit because as I'm a solo poly sort of relationship anarchist. I'm coming from a place where I want all of my love relationships to have the freedom to move in whatever direction is most resonant and supportive of that individual connection. I don't want a floor or ceiling on how close I can be to another human being. But when I think about poly, I really feel like it's not all about me. It's also about them. When I really hold a beloved in a way that encourages them and promotes their delight, and if I'm connected to someone who's finding joy and pleasure and warmth and support from someone else, then that other person is an ally in doing the work I want done in the world, which is bringing more joy and love into that person's life. And so necessarily, I might be willing to do some of the emotional labor that allows me to be in a state of joy and support and pleasure around them, having connected, juicy, supportive relationships that aren't me, you know? So
I hear that. That's great. And isn't that called a relationship?
I mean, ideally, but often people create all kinds of parameters around what their partner's allowed to do in order to insulate them from the experience of insecurity or fear or, you know. So, yes, I do believe that's a relationship. And a healthy one. Mutualistic.
A healthy one.
But then there's the idea that I don't have to be the only one contributing to this person's happiness.
Yeah.
And in fact, I can have joy that other people are enhancing my partner's life. Mm-hmm. And there's a special word for this called compersion.
Compersion?
Mm-hmm. It is like the opposite of jealousy.
And the Sanskrit word would be, the Sanskrit word is mudita. It's just taking joy or pleasure in someone else's joy and pleasure. It's a thousands of year old concept, you know? Yeah. that's the thing I delight the most about Polly, is just like, wow, there's people out there who love the people I love, and maybe in ways that I don't want to.
Right, you go to the opera with them. I'm good.
Right?
I love it. Do you have another point?
Yeah, there was a couple. So the next one was the idea about Polly, just some things I caught where you were talking about polyamory needs. And this may be semantic, but I just wanted to say that there aren't really polyamory needs. Polyamory, I see, is a strategy to meet a variety of needs, as is monogamy. And so really, our needs are universal, and I view polyamory as a strategy. So maybe for me, it's a strategy for freedom and connection. And there's all kinds of needs that poly meets for me, right? And maybe monogamy for some people is around meeting their need for security or their need for
control,
you know, containment, or, you know, I'm trying to think of pro-social needs. So I would just say polyamory needs make it seem like, oh, there's needs that are specific to poly, and I think that there are needs that are universal, and polyamory is a way that we strategize to meet those needs. Some people, like myself, I feel like I was kind of born this way, and I had to free up in order to give myself the permission to move the way my creature naturally wants to move. Universal needs.
You've got head nods going around.
Smiles
the table
and
here.
Head nods.
Yes. And did you have a final point?
I did have a third one. And just because there was a question, and I'm just really appreciating some of your questions because they are really common. And so something about the difference between polyandry and polygamy and monogamy and what's the difference between, you know, polyamory and polygamy. And polygamy, you know, I think that they answered that question so well. But one thing I also wanted to say is polygamy is a marriage-based relationship, and polyamory may or may not have anything to do with that business or structure. You know, so marriage is a structure that was created that has nothing to do with, well, I'm not going to, that's, yeah, I'll just say, so that's a marriage structure, and polyamory may not relate to marriage.
Yeah.
And it may. And that idea of like primary partner is a hierarchical idea, like that there's a primary person that's more important. And in some polyamorous relationships, that is a useful idea, and in others, it isn't. And just that last piece around the question around families and the idea that we might need to hide. And I definitely understand that as a parent, a single parent to a 17-year-old son, it took a lot of courage for me to, as you will, come out in a more public way because of the fear of how I would be judged already as a parent and as a single parent and as a mother. There's so much social pressure and systems of oppression that say that whatever goes wrong with children, it's our fault. And when you add, I'm a polyamorous parent, you know, I've even had my son went to get some support because his best friend committed suicide, or excuse me, however you put that, And when he went to see a therapist, their first few sessions, once they found out I was polyamorous, was about how that was impacting him, not about what he was actually struggling with, which, you know, so I think as much as we can, having visibility and saying, like, this is a relationship style that's just as valid as any other relationship style, and we're not harming our children by having more love in our lives.
Thank you, Artemisia.
Well, thank you for you being a fourth guest. I appreciate that. And you brought up some wonderful points. Thank you very much for all of that.
For sure.
So I just wanted to mention, so Artemisia talked about relationship hierarchy, and we have only just briefly touched on that. But so some people do the non-hierarchical relationship style. My particular choice is hierarchical.
Can you describe the difference?
So the hierarchical is going to be where you maybe have a primary partner and secondary partners, or maybe all your partners are secondary partners. Maybe you don't have a primary partner if you're doing solo polyamory. To me, a primary partner is not a status thing, though. And I think that's something people can feel second best if they're a secondary partner. For me, it's about who is the person that I am sharing finances with and sharing a house with. If I were sharing finances and the house also with that other person that I was in that relationship with years ago, they had to move away. But if not, then they would both be my primary partners, because to me, we're sharing house finances, we're raising children together. And a secondary partner might be the person that's not as involved with all those kinds of things.
Yeah. And is that more common? Or?
I think that's a pretty common.
I think it's especially more common when you've got a already established couple opening up, and there's a way that we're going to maintain kind of our coupleness and invite other people in slowly.
Who have an established relationship that are kind of expanding
right,
the boundaries.
Right, but a lot of time when people come into polyamory, knowing we're all polyamorous and this is what we're doing, it can be a little different. And Artemisia did bring up the term relationship anarchy.
Yes.
And this is basically allowing relationships to blossom in whatever way they want to. You're not having restrictions or boundaries. You're just going to start and see where it goes.
There's not a defined set of rules that you're working in.
Yes and no. Ah. There's not a defined way it can go.
Okay.
We might still have agreements like everyone's going to be practicing safer sex, or, I have limits on how much money I can spend. So, but it's about, if I want to go really deep and see a long term with this person, great. If this other person I see twice a year when we're at Comic-Con, great. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. We have 2 minutes, and I want to make sure that we're getting in important points that you want to bring in. So, Michelle.
So I'm gonna leave with STIs. Sorry about that. Even more than the monogamous community, it's really important that if you're polyamorous, you get STI tested on a regular basis, all partners, because you're not just having sex with that partner, you're having sex with everyone that they've had sex with. And it's considered to be good form, good manners, and
Absolutely.
It's crucial for people's health.
And I was going to say, by and large, people get STIs when they don't talk about it, mm-hmm. when they don't are not using condoms and practicing other safer sex techniques. So polyamory is it's a built-in thing.
Yeah.
It's still difficult.
Yeah.
It's still a difficult conversation. Yeah.
And from you, Alex, any final words?
I feel like just having conversations is kind of like what I'm getting is the core of poly. Just have conversations about everything. Be radically honest with your partner and yourself first, you know, even if that means like, I've noticed I've been sexually attracted to so-and-so lately. I haven't acted on it, but I'm noticing, you know, and then having a conversation around that, just complete radical honesty.
Thank you. I want to thank my guests for today's show, Michelle Call, Executive Director for GALA, Alex Milichev, and Sandy Peace, Clinical Psychologist. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible by Joan Geller Sargent's underwriting. Next week, please join host Fred Monroe for a totally different topic, and I'm sure one that'll keep your interest. You can send your suggestions for topics to voices@kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining us today.